All right, this week we read the Sedra Bow. We'll talk today, Perek Yudbeis, Pasuk Aleph. And today, of course, is Rosh Chodesh Shvat. What does that have to do with anything? We'll soon see. The Torah says, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, V'el Aron, Eretz Mitzrayim L'Emor. God set to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, the first mitzvah that we were taught. HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim. This month should be for you, the first of the months. The first will be for you of the month of the year. So the month of Nisan is the first month of the year. We have, as we know, sort of an odd calendar. The new year begins in Tishrei with the seventh month of the year. But the new year itself, the new year in terms of months, begins Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rashi says, HaChodesh Hazeh. We all know, how do we begin the months? How are the months calculated? So when witnesses at the time of the Beit HaMikdash saw the first sliver of the new moon, they would report to Beis Din, and Beis Din would declare the moon sanctified. So Chodesh Hazeh, Rashi says, Herehu Levono B'chidusho. God showed Moshe the moon in its renewal. Meaning a sliver of this form, Rashi says later, quoting the Gemara Shoshana, when you see the moon in such and such appearance, then you'll sanctify the month. But here Rashi says, God showed Moshe the moon, b'chidushov, v'omalo, and he said to him, kishahyarech mischadesh, yilucha rosh chodesh. When the moon is renewed, because as we know, the moon disappears towards the end of the month, and then its reappearance heralds the new month. So when you see the moon renewed, that's Rosh Chodesh, that is the beginning of the month. The simple pshat in the pasuk is Al Chodesh Nisan Amarlo. Zeye Rosh L'Seder Mina Chodeshim. The simple pshat is, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim. God spoke to Moshe on what was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So on that month, on that day, Moshe received this command, and Nisan there then became the first month. That's the order of the month. Iyar is second, Sivan is third, etc. That's HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim. God introduced the Geula, the process of redemption, with this mitzvah. And because everything else followed from this. Once you know this is the first of the months, then God said on the 10th of the month, you'll set aside an animal, and that animal will be the Karban Pesach, and then all the other mitzvahs follow. In a sense, we've come full circle, or at least back to a potential point of origin, because the very first Rashi in Bereishis begins, Bereishis Bara Elokim Omer of Yitzchak, The Torah really could have begun with this mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. She mitzvah Rishona, she nitzav Yisrael, because it's the very first mitzvah that the Jewish people were commanded. The first mitzvah. So in fact, here we are. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. Now that we're here, so we can admit it would have been a very strange place to start the Torah. It's even a strange place to start the discussion of the Geula. Because if we think of a redemption from Egypt, we think of Pesach. What do we think of? Karban Pesach, Matzah, Sipurit Yisrael, Seder, Yisra Chomets. That's what we think of. We think of Geula. We don't think of the of Rosh Chodesh when we think of the Geula. And I suppose the general question that we can ask is, why is there a Rosh Chodesh at all? Why is it a celebration for the beginning of the month? And what's the great joy that we feel? The Beis HaMikdash, it was a day of Yom Tov, a special karban. The Torah says in Balosha, Uv Yom Simchaschem, Uv Moadechem, Uv Roshei Chodeshechem. On the day of your rejoicing, of your Moadim, your festivals, in Rosh Chodesh, Uskatem B'chatzotzros, you'll blow the trumpets accompanying the offerings that you're bringing. Why? I mean, what's so special about Rosh Chodesh? What's the great joy? This special karban, and today's Rosh Chodesh. we said Yalav Yavo in the davening. There's a minig, an ancient minig, to say Hallel as well on Rosh Chodesh. It's unusual, because in the world, the rest of the world, there really is no special feeling that accompanies the beginning of the month. When does February begin? You know? Wednesday. I keep track of this thing. Somebody does. I'll let you know. So Wednesday is February 1st. What does, you know also, right? We all know. Why? What is the beginning of the month? You have another mortgage bill to pay. That's what it means. There's no special blowing of the trumpets. There's certainly no hallel. The bills come due again. That's the beginning of the secular month. But Rosh Chodesh is the time of joy. Now, why is that? It's not as if there's a specific event that's been commemorated in history, like all the other festivals that we have, our commemoration of some event. Rosh Chodesh seems to be implanted for a specific reason. Now, you should all know that Rosh Chodesh is special Yom Tov for women. Chazal say, as a reward for not participating in the Chet Egel, the sin of the golden calf, so Rosh Chodesh was given to women as a Yom Tov, on which they don't work, they don't do any melachos. How women observe that today, I don't know. You can tell me. They come to a shiur, that's how you do it. But why Rosh Chodesh? And Leila, so we understand, the reward for the Chet Egel was very well deserved. The women's jewels had to be seized by force by their menfolk. They didn't voluntarily participate at all. But why Rosh Chodesh? Of all things, what's the relationship with Rosh Chodesh? And how do we classify Rosh Chodesh as a day? What do we do on Rosh Chodesh? So this we actually said in the davening this morning. Rosh Chodeshem. In Musaf we say, we characterize Rosh Chodesh as Zman Kapara L'chol Toldosam, as a time of atonement. L'chol Toldosam, for all your generations, forever. It's the time of atonement, Rosh Chodesh. And Rosh Chodesh is a day of Kapara. In fact, that's why six times a year, when there's no Yom Tov associated with the month or the period of time, Hanukkah, for example, or Rosh Hashanah, six times a year, the day before Rosh Chodesh, is observed as Yom Kippur Katan, a little Yom Kippur, a special slichos to stay in the afternoon. So why is that? I mean, the other thing which is interesting about Rosh Chodesh is the Shir Shel Yom. There's a special song that we recite, that we said this morning in Shacharis, in addition to the regular Shir Shel Yom today for Monday, and that's Tilim Kuf Dalad, Baruch Nafshi Es Hashem. Oh, my soul, bless Hashem. Hashem Elokai Godalta Ma'od, that you, God, you're very great. And then it's a beautiful account of Briyas Ha'olam, of everything that God created, the heavens, the clouds, the winds, the water, as well as the great harmony that exists in creation. He sends the springs into the streams. They flow between the mountains. They water every beast of the field. They quench the wild creature's thirst. Near them dwell the heaven's birds. The birds are twirping now, as a matter of fact. From among the branches they give forth song. He waters the mountains from his upper chambers. From the fruit of your works, the earth is sated. Causes vegetation to sprout for the cattle. Plants through man's labor, brings forth bread from the earth, wine that gladdens man's heart, etc. Culminating in Marabu Masach Hashem, Kulam Bechokhmos Liso, Mol Oretz Kinyanecha. How abundant are your works, God, all created with wisdom. The earth is full of your possessions. Ichvod Hashem le'olam yismach Hashem b'masov. May the glory of God endure forever. Let Hashem rejoice in his works. It's a beautiful capital. As long as it is, it takes us about 15 seconds to say it, because most people are out the door on their way to work. But it's a beautiful capital to Hillel. The question is why? I mean, what kind of shir is this? When we look at Barki Nafshi, it really introduces us to the area. Barki Nafshi is a celebration of creation, of the creation of the world, and it's designed, you see from the Pesukim, to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything that's out there, and certainly its beauty, its harmony, its gifts to us, and as well as, just toss it out the window, we don't mind. It's a gift to us, and additionally, additionally, in addition to the gift, the constant opportunity it provides us to recognize the godless Hashem. And just look outside now. It's a beautiful day today. This morning was very foggy, right? Now look at the contrast of the green trees and the blue skies. You can't beat that. The story of the Rav Zatzal said, the Rav grew up in Prizhan. He was born in Prizhan, grew up in Racine, which is a small town, small village in White Russia. He said once that he never saw a great body of water until he was an adult. Because in White Russia, there are no great bodies of water. There are rivers here and there, but there are no great bodies of water until he was about 20 years old, and he visited relatives in Gdansk. Gdansk is Danzig. It's on the Baltic, so in the northern part of Poland. And he said when he got to the shore, he just looked out and he saw this endless expanse of blue sea. He'd never seen such a sight before. And he did, as Aloha commands, made the bracha. Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokim Echolam, Osem Asa Bracious. Praising God for the works of creation. And then he records that he was moved to say this Kapitel Tehillim. Spontaneously. Baruch Inafshi Yis Hashem, Hashem Elokai, Godalta Ma'od, Hod V'Hador L'Voshka. That type of experience, the Rav said, just a genuine religious emotion, looking at the beauty of the world and being moved spontaneously to praise the Kaddish Baruch. He went on to say, this is one of the oral shiurim that I think was written up, he went on to say that that type of genuine, spontaneous religious emotion is almost unknown in America. It's almost unknown. We live very regimented existences, and that deficiency is really reflected in our Shmiras HaMitzvot, in the way we observe the mitzvot of the Torah. I think it's something that we all recognize. We all recognize somewhat to our chagrin. Maybe we don't know any other way, but we should think through it. The fact is, one thing that we all recognize is if you teach someone to do something, you can't teach someone to feel something. And we're very good at teaching people what to do, because the mechanics, the formulas, are all there. We're very proficient in doing things. We have the right shear, the right quantity in the mitzvah, and we do it at the right time, and there's the right formula, and there's the right number of words. We're very good at creating the appropriate halachic experience. And it's not to be trivialized. Because obviously without the appropriate halachic experience, we have nothing. That's indispensable. You can't have the feeling of Shabbos unless you have Shmiras Shabbos. Otherwise you're creating something that doesn't exist. Just like you can't have the feeling of wearing tzitzis unless you're actually wearing tzitzis. And all the mitzvahs of the Torah are like that. We can't, it's especially true in davening. You can't daven without saying the words. But it's very possible to say the words and not be davening. That is a sensation that I think all of us experience from time to time, of saying the words and not davening. So in fact, that notion of just being moved, having one's soul moved to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to reach out to God, the Rav said, and I think it's very true, that experience is almost lost to us. Maybe we have it a few times a year. The better among us will have it more often, but to have it on a regular basis, that doesn't exist. He said in Europe it was more common because people had role models, people, individuals who genuinely moved them. You saw almost kedusha in them, and so they reminded the person who saw them of human potential. But in fact, it's much more difficult to acquire that today. To many people who yearn for spiritual nourishment, but in fact their souls are not moved, are not aroused. Especially they yearn for some type of spiritual fulfillment, but they eschew mitzvah, and therefore they lack the mechanism, the means to reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so they're left yearning. That's very common in the world, because you hear much today about people seeking. But what they're seeking is not the Beit Medrash. They're seeking something that's outside them that they're not going to find. And the converse experience is also well known to us, of people who have the mitzvahs and observe the mitzvahs to chol prater v'dikdukel. The mitzvahs in every detail, every particular, but without experiencing an inner world at all. That the mitzvahs are external. They're superficial to them. They don't penetrate their core. And certainly that's reflected occasionally in the observance of the mitzvahs. That's reflected more often in things which are not necessarily defined by taryag, like vices we might pursue, or things which are defined as part of taryag, but are not necessarily perceived as avodah Hashem, unfortunately, like the mitzvos ben al-machavero, or ethics in business, or just the way we conduct ourselves in the world. If it's not perceived as serving God, if we're putting in an honest day's work, then we're lax on that, even if we are very focused on avodah Hashem in other areas. And it's so interesting that the shift of generations, we're of course very pious today, and therefore it's a constitutional right to have a minyan for mincha, or to have to bench with a mezuman. But you know, the halacha is not really like that. The halacha says a poel, for example, a worker is working on top of a tree, and zman kriyashma comes. He's allowed to say just the first pasuk, nothing else, because otherwise he's cheating his employer. And in Birchas HaMazon, a poel can't say the full Birchas HaMazon, only the first few brachos, because otherwise he's cheating his employer also. You have these halachos, and it's in the Gemara, it's in the Rambam, it's in the Shulchan Aruch. So we're very machmir, you know, in Birchas HaMazon and Tefillah. We're also very mekil in the Gnei book sometimes. I mean, who even thinks of these things today? That unless you get permission to, you know, daven mincha, those 10 minutes are stolen from your workday, right? I don't know many people punch out daven mincha and punch back in 10 minutes later. Those who punch time cards. But it would seem pretty obvious that, granted, people muffle it, maybe the employers as well. But the Chazal said the halacha doesn't recognize those types of allowances. That means if a person will daven a long shmon esrei at the expense of his boss, or for that matter, at the expense of the customer who's waiting, then it means you're trivializing other people's lives or other people's money. And that's not avodas Hashem. That's the antithesis of avodas Hashem. So it's very difficult to create that that inner world. When's the last time we really felt something? Stirred. Aroused. It happens occasionally. You know, people are stirred ne'ilah time. Alright? But you can't wait once a year for that. So how then do we create lives for ourselves in which this type of arousal, this type of inner world becomes very vibrant, that we sense God's presence. We sense that He's listening to our tefillos, and therefore we're not in a rush to leave. He's listening to our tefillos, and therefore we crave the opportunity to pour out our hearts to Him. How often do we have those experiences? As opposed to looking at the clock, saying, I have to leave, I have to go, it's too long, etc. Shul especially is a very ambivalent setting for tefillah. You know, as I've mentioned a number of times over the past years, it's a very ambivalent setting because, we live together for short periods of time in a cocoon and everyone's personalities come out and people have different perspectives. Not necessarily invalid. For some, the shul is too big, it's too small, the davening is too long, it's too quick, there's too much singing, there's too little singing. Everyone has their own individual tastes, and therefore within the panoply of tastes and desires, people somehow come together and strive on the ideal level to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On a less than ideal level, the discomfort of forced attendance is masked by the social atmosphere. that's what it becomes. But if we have to estimate how many people come to shul, for example, on a Shabbos morning, to be genuinely moved by tefillah, Torah, and kedusha, I would hesitate to speculate on the percentages. I'll leave that to you and your consciences, or you'll take a survey and you'll let me know. But I wouldn't think it's that high percentage, frankly. People just come just because they want to spend these holy moments, grasp these holy moments in time, together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our innermost thoughts. That is really an objective. So what do people do? Well, we have, especially the last 10, 15 years in American society, we have creation of gimmicks, you know, short-term measures, smaller groups, or song fests that are designed to give people a rush, a sense of exhilaration about tefillah. But that's not always God-centered. Sometimes it is, but not always. It more is focused on externals. What delights the senses? What's pleasing to listen to? What will get me feeling involved? But that's not necessarily the internal world, the inner world of the person that's designed to be affected. So how then do we develop that inner world? You have to go to a small minyan, a Halbach minyan, go to the Kotel. How do we change the inner world? The Chazal told us there's only one way for a person to change the inner world, and that's inside the person. That's it. There's nothing on the outside that's going to change it. It's just the person contemplating what are his or her objectives, motivations, true desires in life. They're mitzvahs that are designed, I mean, all mitzvahs on some level, but certain mitzvahs in particular, that are designed to stimulate our inner world, to stimulate our soul, to make us think about the Shekhinah, and make us think about our place in God's world. And one such mitzvah, and one such day, is Rosh Chodesh, is HaChodesh HaZelachem. That is that mitzvah. Rosh Chodesh is a day on which we contemplate the world around us. We look at creation. We appreciate creation. We look at the heavens and the trees and the plants, sometimes the fog, and then the sunshine. And we think about exactly what our place is. And that's Zman Kapor L'chol Toldosom. Zman Kapor is not necessarily a reference to the sins of the previous month. It's true as well. Zman Kapara, it's like Yom Kippurim, it's a day of reflection. It's a day we contemplate, we think about our inner world, the cycle begins again in terms of our reflection. It's an opportunity to rebuild ourselves. That's what Rosh Chodesh accomplishes. In a way, just like our inner world is dormant, Rosh Chodesh is also dormant. And aside from saying Hallel and Yalla V'Yavo, and I think in the schools they make the kids wear white shirts, aside from that, there's really no sense of what Rosh Chodesh is and how it's supposed to be a step back. It doesn't mean it's a day of Issur Malacha, but even within the context of Malacha, today just to think about where we are in God's world and maybe even acknowledge Marabu Masech Hashem, Kulam B'Chochma Sisa, to think about where we are inside, not just outside. The fact is, you can look at the trees and the sky, and it can be just a sensual experience also, not the reflection of the godless Hashem of the creation. It's a beautiful sight. Like people see art or listen to music, it's pleasing to the senses, but it doesn't necessarily touch the soul. And by the way, we're so far removed from that world that very often today people mistake the sensual for the soulful. They think something which arouses the senses is really catering to the soul, the inner world of the person. And that's not true. It's a different type of experience than the grossly physical experience, the grossly sensual, but there's an aesthetic sensual pleasure, delight that we have. That's also not the soul. All right? The fact is, you can hear a great chazan and be moved, but that's not necessarily an experience of the soul either. It could be, but it's not necessarily.
You could hear the Philharmonic and also be moved in a certain sense. That's also not an experience of the soul. That's an experience of the aesthetic sense that we have. We're very removed from that world because the impact of a material society, of the grossly physical nature of the society, which just impacts, thrusts its way into our lives constantly, really inundates us, which is with its graphic images. It's very difficult to combat. So difficult that when someone speaks of the world of the soul, very often people, even religious Jews, tune out because they think the world of the soul is that you just make a bracha, or you put on tefillin, or you you observe Shabbos by sleeping, and that's the world of the soul. That's a different world. The world of the soul, you see only through tefillin. I mean, I shouldn't say only, but primarily, to a great extent, through tefillin. Sama nafshi l'elokim, sama nafshi l'kel chai. That's what David said. David monitored the world of the soul, his soul, and its state, and its connection to God, the way we monitor our weight, or the level of friendships that we have. That type of obsessiveness that we have over things which are really finite, David had over the world of the soul. Just imagine the pasuk. Excuse me. Think about the pasuk for a second. Sama nafshi l'elokim, sama nafshi l'kel chai. My soul thirsts for God, thirsts for the living God, thirsts. When do we thirst for God? We thirst for a Diet Coke and say, bracha. I'm not quite thirsting for God. When do we thirst for God? It's a very difficult experience to have, especially in our world. As I said before, if we're lucky, you know, on our level, we'll have it a few times a year. But that's not the purpose of life. The purpose of life somehow is to have that experience constantly. Tefillah is supposed to arouse that. Talmud Torah, stimulate the intellect, you know, to recognize the Chochmas Hashem. And all the mitzvos that are reminders, physical mitzvos, mitzvos of thought, like Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, Yichun Hashem, etc. All those things are designed to have a mitzvos tmidios, because I'll call them, the permanent mitzvos, perpetual mitzvos, that we can do on a constant basis. All those are designed to perfect the soul. But if we don't engage in the practice at all, if the practice itself is so alien and foreign to us, then it becomes non-existent. And then we become almost robotic in our behavior, even in our shmiras ha-mitzvahs. That's really what Rosh Chodesh is. It's zman kaporo l'chol tol dosom. It's a moment designed to be a reflection. Why? I noted a few times. Our calendar is determined by the moon. The moon is the only entity in creation that changes on a regular basis, a cyclical basis, before our eyes. Everything else is constant. When the sun rises, the sun sets, it's basically the same sun every day. But the moon is different. The moon will change shape before our eyes. Not really changing shape, of course. It all depends on the angle and the reflection from the sun. But to our eyes, it changes shape. It starts very small, larger, 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 full, and then smaller, smaller, smaller. The waxing and waning of the moon is the reflection, is God's legacy in creation to us of his creative powers. Because we see on a monthly basis that type of change before our eyes, and therefore it's worthy of a special prayer, that special prayer being Kiddush Levana. That's why I think Rashi starts with the way he does in Bereishis. Lahoy Yitzarech, Rashi said, quoting Rabbi Yitzchak, Lahoy Yitzarech lahaschil es haTorah ela me'achodesh hazeh lachem. The Torah could have started with achodesh hazeh lachem, because that's the first mitzvah. Why then does it start Bereishis bar Elokim? So Rashi says, koach ma'isav higi le'amo, according to the pasuk, to remind the world of our claim to Eretz Yisrael. But ask a broader question. And the fact is, you can have claimed Eretz Yisrael without knowing the precise order of creation also. There's a reason why the Torah started Bereishis bar Elokim. That's the reason why Bereishis bar Elokim is the subject of Baruch Hinashe. Because there's a need to provide the foundation for the mitzvahs. The foundation for the mitzvahs
is that God is the Borei Olam. Molo Haaretz Kinyonecha. The world is filled with your possessions, with your acquisitions. The Torah could start with mitzvos, but then the Torah would be just a dry, defecated a book of laws, like the statement of laws that you have in the secular world, or the U.S. Code, which is very tedious reading. We don't need a book of laws. We need to be reminded constantly of Bereishis Bara Elokim, and that's the function of nature, and that really is why Rashi said, Tachodesh is Elohim. Not that Rosh Chodesh is, or Kiddush HaChodesh is, that's a phenomenal mitzvah. It means HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem is a restatement of Bereishis Bara Elokim. Because Rosh Chodesh is Man Kafar L'chol Tov L'Osam. Rosh Chodesh, as we see the moon begin to wax again, Rosh Chodesh is a reminder of Bereishis Bara Elokim. So therefore, the Torah could have started just with simple mitzvos, or given us a framework in which to understand those mitzvos and recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is Briyas HaOlam, Bereishis Bara Elokim. That's why it was done. And I think that's why Rosh Chodesh is also the special Yom Tov for women. Because women, you'll tell me this is true, women already have a very active, vibrant inner world than men do. Men are much more externally focused. Women are much more inwardly focused. So they're appreciative of that inner world. So granted, we said before, the reward was for the non-participation of the Chet HaEgel, but the reward is Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is a day which targets the inner world of the person. And who better to appreciate that than women? Because they will especially have an understanding of what the nature of the day is, an ability to reckon with nature on a very real and personal level, much more than men. And that's why there's a meaning that women don't do any work, because work, malacha, is the perfection, or at least involvement, with the external world. That's what malacha is. Every type of malacha is taking one entity or several entities of the external physical world and doing something with them. So that's why there's a minute to abstain from that type of work on Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh is designed to awaken our inner world for those who are most in tune with their inner world, and that's women. For men, I'm here representing all men this morning, but for men, Rosh Chodesh is a needed reminder as well. And that's HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem. Now, there's a beautiful raya for this that I thought of this morning. Gemara says in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Mem Zayin Amud Beis, tells a story about Rabbi Loza ben Aruch. Rabbi Loza ben Aruch was one of the great Talmidim, one of the greatest Talmidim, if not the greatest, of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So much so that the Mishnah says in Avos that he had five Talmidim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was one of the saviors of Klal Yisrael, one of the saviors. The one who was a Nasi at the time of the Churban, the second Churban, who instituted the Takanos, some of which still exist today, but Takanos which really restructured Jewish life in the aftermath of the Churban in a way which we could survive. And that's how we were able to survive, because of his greatness. He had five Talmidim. One of them was Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. So he would say, this is the second Girsa, I'll read the whole Mishnah, it's the Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud Beis in Avos. He would say, "Im yukol chachme yisob b'chaf moznayim, Eliezer ben Hurkanus b'kaf shniyo." You take all the chachamim, all the wise men of Israel, put them on one side of the scale, and one of his talmidim, Eliezer ben Hurkanus, on the other, machrias kula. So Rabbi Eliezer would outweigh all of them. But Abishol then said, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, upon further reflection, if you would take all the sages of Israel, put them on one side of the scale, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus afi mohem, and even Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus with them, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch bekaf shniyo, and put Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch on the other side of the scale, machrias kulam, he, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, outweighs all of them. So Gemara in Shabbos tells a story of Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch that he once visited Diomessus, the Maya de Diomessus, the waters of Diomessus. Yerushalmi says it was his wife's hometown.
Emmaus, known for its waters, its spa, hot springs. So, coming from Yavne, which is outside of Ashkelon, a nice town of hot springs and spas, seems quite attractive. So the Gemara says, Imshif Basrayu, this great Rebbe Aruch is drawn to it, seduced by the waters of Diomessus, and decide to live there and stay. The Akar Talmudeh, his learning was uprooted. He completely forgot his learning because he was drawn after the spa life. Spa life is good, not as on a constant basis, but every now and then. All right. So the Gemara says that when he returned, they gave him an Aliyah Shul, and he's supposed to read our Pasuk, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, that this month is for you, and instead he mistook the letters. That's how distant he'd grown from Torah, but of course the symbol is even greater. He mistook the letters of HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, and he read it, HaChereish Hoyo Libam. Each word had one letter changed. HaChereish Hoyo Libam. Their hearts were silent. Their hearts were deaf. Lev, of course, is the mind. What happened? It means that when he went to Diomessus and lived there, he lost his inner world. He became very soft and self-indulgent, pampered himself. His heart was dead. He lost his inner world. His inner world was dead. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, that mitzvah, which is supposed to be the spark, the catalyst for igniting our inner world, Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of every month, thinking anew about creation, about the Borei Olam, about our role in that world, Rabbi Moshe ben Aruch, he was dead. His inner world was gone. HaChereish HaYalibam. It's a beautiful chazal. The Gemara continues that they prayed for him, and it was a Har Talmudeh, and his learning came back. He regained his inner world. The fact is, if a person knows where to look, if a person is willing to undergo the sometimes wrenching, but in the long term, very productive process of developing an inner world, of shaking ourselves away from everything else, from all the pampering and the pleasuring and the big houses and the big cars and this and that and all the big toys that we need. The person can break away from that. That's how we begin the process of developing an inner world and appreciating not only Rosh Chodesh and HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, but appreciating that as the portal, as the opening to all the other mitzvahs of the Torah. The Chodesh HaZeh Lochem links us back to Bereishis Bara Elokim. That's why Rashi really bookends it and says everything up from Bereishis until now, it's introductory. It's not even necessarily indispensable to the Torah. It's only indispensable in one sense. The Torah is more than just doing things. The Torah is about the inner world that we are able to, we have to create for ourselves. And that's why I think it's also the first mitzvah. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem introduces us to the process of Geula. Before we hear about the Karm Pesach, and Matzah, and Maror, and Chametz, and Shabbos, and anything else, the very first thing we have to do is create for ourselves that inner world. If we don't have an inner world, we really have nothing but form. We're just doing things. Doing things in a rote way that really is not that different from the nations of the world. There's a beautiful mashal that you find in Medrash Springs that someone asked the question that people ask occasionally here also. What's the difference really between us and the nations of the world? I mean, we have a temple, they have a temple. We have prayers, they have prayers. We have ritual, they have ritual. What's the difference? So Medrash answers, the difference between looking at a distance at a human being. All right. You look at a person from afar, person. You look at a good statue from afar, looks like a person also. Looks like a person. Especially a dummy. Yeah, you look at, you go to Madame Tussauds. All right. That's our modern mashal. You go to Madame Tussauds, you see the wax figure. Some of them are very lifelike. As a matter of fact, from a distance, they're all lifelike. You go up close, and you see that they're lifeless. They're dead. There's nothing to them.
That's what the Medrash says. From a distance, everything looks the same. We have a shul, they have a church, we have prayers, they have prayers, we have holidays, they have holidays. It all looks the same from a distance. So when you get up close and you see which is alive and which is not alive, how do we determine what's alive and what's not alive? Not by the external. Because the external, it all looks the same. You know, in the churches too, they say Tehillim on occasion. Psalms also part of the Bible. It's not just we're not the only ones saying Tehillim. From the outside, from a distance, it all looks the same. But you get up close and you see which has an inner life, which has an inner world, which has an inner spark. And then if you understand the difference, a shul, tefillah, yom tovim, mitzvos, that's life. That's a real chayim. That's the heart of a chayim. That's real life. You look at that, you look at it up close, if you experience it, not just do it, but you experience it, then you realize the difference. That's Achodesh HaZelochem. If we don't have an inner world, we don't have an appreciation of Rosh Chodesh, of Zman Kapara, of the necessity on a monthly basis to renew ourselves, to think again about our relationship with Achodesh Baruch Hu, to the imperatives of our world that emerge from the fact that we're Avdei Hashem, then in fact we're lost. And we're just doing things for the sake of doing them, and not really impacting on ourselves. And when they have no impact, then the corruption becomes apparent, that we could be as corrupt, if not more, than anyone else in the world. The very first thing, therefore, is Rosh Chodesh. Everything is based on that. And that's what Rashi says, that could have been the first mitzvah. It's a strange thing. We would write a Torah, what would make the first mitzvah? Shabbos, Shabbat HaFat HaMocha, the first mitzvah, number one on the list. Numero uno. No. The first mitzvah, Chodesh HaZelachem. Because if you're not going to create the inner world through Rosh Chodesh, everything else becomes desiccated and dry and without any real vibrancy to them and without any possible long-term effect on the personality. That's why the Torah starts at Chodesh HaZelachem, and that's why this became the predicate for all the other mitzvahs, and especially for Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. You have to awaken the Jews before they could leave Egypt. And the awakening of the Jews was not just through Karban Pesach. It's all part of it. That gives, you know, it animates us. Once we're awake, then we're the things to do also. What awakens us? Rosh Chodesh. Briyas Olam. Recognizing and appreciating the Borei Olam. Accepting the obligation of Baruch Hinashi Et Hashem. Hashem Elokai Godalta Mahod. That is really the test of a person. And then as the Kapitel ends, sing a song, Oshir Hashem Chayai, Azamer L'Elokai B'Aldi. As long as I'm alive, I want to sing to God. Azamer B'Aldi. B'Aldi, while I am still here, Azamer, I'll sing and I'll rejoice and I'll do everything possible to bring a pleasure, so to speak, to my Creator. That really is the test of the Jew. It's that test that we contemplate every month, sometimes 2 days. 2 days of Shadash. Rosh Chodesh Shvat this year is one day. Actually, every year is one day. The Rosh Chodesh Shvat, that's what we think about. Rosh Chodesh can't just, you know, sail through us unnoticed, just with a little longer davening. Rosh Chodesh, especially for women, but certainly for men too, it's a time where we revivify our inner world, Zman Kapar L'Chol Taldosom, and then it gives us a charge for the rest of the month to look at life differently, look at mitzvahs and Torah differently, look at our obligations differently as well. If we do that as individuals, there's no doubt, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim. It's not just the month of the individual, it's Lochem. It's a month for Klal Yisrael. And then this month should be a month in which all Jews are brought closer to understanding what the true mission of Klal Yisrael is. And then as we know, if we recognize that, and as we say during Kiddush Levana, David Melch Yisrael Chai V'Kayom, each month, we build on each month, it brings us closer to the day where that recognition of the godless Hashem and our obligations of the world will once again herald the coming of Mashiach and the Gula Shlema as did in Mitzrayim in the past. Okay. Any questions? Yes, ma'am.
You're not supposed to say that you're not supposed to say that.
Then Rosh Chodesh? Yan Hashem Yom Tzara. It's Yom Tzara, right. We only say Lamatzayach on a day where there's no hint of any festivity, regular day. It's a Shabbos, a Yom Tov, Rosh Chodesh. We wouldn't say Lamatzayach. Because it was Yan Hashem Yom Tzara. God should answer us on the day of travail, the day of suffering. But here it can't be defined as Yom Tzara, because this is a day set aside for us to recognize the possibility that man has to return and come closer to Hashem and accept their obligations.